Yo, 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 what up? It's your boy Colby Mack, and this is the Colby Told Me podcast. Yo, whenever I want to deep dive with the Mack himself, where I get to amplify my movie reviews for your listening pleasure, would you please consider giving your boy a follow? I'm on all the socials at Colby Told Me on Twitter and Instagram, and sometimes I'm on Facebook at Colby Mack. Welcome, welcome, welcome back. This is episode 14, my first ever Hayao Miyazaki film review. I know, how dare I? And a famed film critic, somewhat so, who's never taken in a Hayao Miyazaki film. Don't blame me, blame my daddy. And don't blame him, blame my mama. I guess it was just content that wasn't easily accepted. Like, in my mind, I know that they're currently on Max, formerly HBO Max, formerly HBO, Studio Ghibli films, and, you know, the Princess Mononoke's, and, you know, the My Neighbor Totoro, and Spirited Away, and Ponyo, and all those films. Those are cable films. I didn't grow up with cable, in particular. Those films weren't available to me. I think a lot of the international fare that I had access to was, like, karate films, Jackie Chan films, and whatever stuff that my uncle was into, and cartoons wasn't his bag. So you know what? Hayao Miyazaki films wasn't in my bag, but I'm finally here, so try your best not to make too much fun as I take in a really interesting journey to the Miyazaki-verse with the boy and the heron. A young boy named Mahito, yearning for his mother, ventures into a world shared by the living and the dead. There, death comes to an end and finds a new beginning, a semi-autobiographical fantasy from the mind of Hayao Miyazaki. Now, let me tell you that I went into this movie iceberg cold, and the marketing of this film, I guess, was also cold. It's just one of those things where it's like, this man, matched with his prestige, puts his name and says, yo, I'm coming out with a movie, and this may be my last, and I've heard about it nonstop since the springtime. There's no marketing for it. There's no trailer for it prior to its release internationally, and very little details about what this thing was about. So I said, you know what? Let my first film, at the time, of Hayao Miyazaki, tell it to him. Let it be my last. Well, let it be his last film, right? Then later come to find out that he's like not really retiring. He's probably going to take some time and then work on some other stuff. Now, I see a poster of a young boy and I see a heron. And I know very vague details about this. And only until I'm just reading the synopsis from IMDb right now to y'all did I have any idea what this movie's about. Because even after watching this movie, I have no idea what this movie's about, and I don't think the person that wrote this synopsis knows what this movie's about. Like, yes, it is about a young boy named Mahito, and that was very apparent, a young boy who is dealing with the trauma of losing his mother, and this is essentially like post-war time, right? Nondescript on what war, but let's just say it's World War II, right? The transition of being a young boy who experiences a great loss and having to contend with his world changing, that feels very familiar, right? I had to also at an early age contend with a step-parent coming into my life. All the other things that came into Maito's life don't make a lick of sense to me. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I'm not trying to be like anything. I don't know if viewing a movie, if there should be like rules that need to be applied to it. At least maybe I'm the uninitiated because no one told me that I needed a legend to be able to decipher what the hell is going on. Because very much plain, like I stated, There's a young boy inserted into a newer situation. His daddy's got a new mom. I can't even say that a hijinks ensue because I truly don't understand what happens. I find myself to be an intelligent man. And this was messing with me because I thought like, oh, is this a joke? I like fantasy films. This may have been too surreal for me to understand, and I don't like the way that that makes me feel. But then someone, a Twitter follower, let me know, and he said that he can only speak for himself, but that Hayao Miyazaki films are like dreams. They make sense in the context that they're in. Going through a fantasy adventure as a child to try and make sense of the real world around us, trying to make sense and order in a world that doesn't. That sounds excellent. And I charge it to the game for a storyteller to be able to disseminate that thematically through the narrative in varying senses of subtlety and metaphor. Now, someone also said that maybe if I watch this film a few more times, it's gonna begin to make sense. I like to think of movies like I think of food. If it takes me 5 times to enjoy this burger before I really get a true understanding if it's good or not, I don't think it's a good burger. But then that's the beauty of art and not food, right? Is that everybody is going to take it one way versus another. Art is subjective. And I get that there's so much legacy and greatness to what makes a Hayao Miyazaki film. And maybe I'm so late to the game that like I don't understand the keys that have been given along the way throughout his filmography to best make his art suitable for everybody or cultivate your palate. So maybe I'm just behind. I still don't feel good. But I will say, the music is phenomenal. Some of the early critics groups were getting around to, doing our end of the year of honors. And, you know, The Boy and the Heron is definitely receiving accolades in a lot of varying elements of its composition. And I think the most warranted is the score. It is super dope. Like, it's really transfixing. I think that's the thing that, at least for me, I can be able to tolerate the entire experience of this film because I found the score to be captivating and I found the imagery to be really just engaging. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not doing anything super dynamic with its animation style, but it really lends itself to the simplicity of the creation of like the look of this film to how emotional and evocative everything is. And I found that to be really dope. So while it may be too surreal for my sensibilities narratively, I think what we see, that visual language, it makes sense. And I could really vibe with that. The hard part is that because that's all I have, I find very little to be able to extrapolate from with the character work. Now, is it fair for myself to sit here and apply some of my screenwriting pillars to like Eastern storytelling? And that's the trouble that I have when I'm embracing a lot of different international features, is that I find that certain pinches that they have for telling stories seem very different the way that I interpret them. But this is also the way how I understand characters, and I think fundamentally gives me that disconnect. Now, I will say the voice performances, that was easy to connect to because I could be able to pick them out. And I was able to pick out some of these voices before I even saw a poster. Like, oh, snap, that's Christian Bale. Oh, snap, I definitely hear Dave Bautista. And I was a little confused on on who was Robert Pattinson playing and you know, who was Willem Dafoe playing. Oh, that's Florence Pugh. And they were good. They were familiar. And that endeared itself to me. Now, we can kind of get into regards to, is it right or wrong for these different nationality actors and actresses lending their voices to predominantly Asian characters? But then maybe that's another conversation for another day. But ultimately, I'm seeking throughout this endeavor of some sense of being on the same page. And I've got the look of the movie, I've got the sound of the movie, and I've got the voices of the movie. But ultimately, at the heart, the story, I'm struggling, y'all, and I want to like Miyazaki. Everybody is like, "Oh, Miyazaki is Miyazaki that," and like, all these different stuff. It's like, and then I'm hearing some people say, "You know what, Colby? This may not have been the film to like be the best little entry point." That doesn't mean I'm gonna give it a pass though. Because I think ultimately the disconnect is I can't get a jive in like what character motivations are going on. That even aside from all those things, I should still be able to follow along with the protagonist, understand their inner goals, their outer goals, and clear opposition to those things. And I don't know who's, not every story needs a bad guy. Not every story necessarily needs an antagonist, but some goal, some hurdle, some opposing force to our protagonist. And I don't know if it's the Tower Master, if it's the Parakeet King, if it's the Heron himself. It seems like it'd be any three of those things, but it doesn't make sense to what we get. It's like a puzzle with pieces that don't fit, but I guess in a dream, you can make these pieces do whatever they want. But I think in a film, that's not how that works. And I'm happy that like I had a chance to check in with some of my homies that can try to help me as best as they could. And there's certain things in the film that happened where I can understand why this maestro of cinema is celebrated to a certain extent. But how far do we let pedigree and legacy go before like holding it to a particular standard of like, what's going on here? Like, I shouldn't have to watch this multiple times to get it. And then it's crazy that there's some folks that are out here trying to compare this to Spider-Verse. I gotta be honest with you. Like, what Across the Spider-Verse does, comparatively to The Boy and the Heron, these are two different leagues. And I dare someone, I welcome someone to be like, Kobe, listen, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Because if you're talking about animation, leaps and bounds Across the Spider-Verse has got this in the bag. It's doing things that are so innovative, like it takes time for your eyes to adjust to what we're seeing. What Daniel Pemberton does with the score inside of Across the Spider-Verse and, you know, the soundtrack. This isn't about comparing the two things, but then again, we're in a season where we're comparing everything and we're giving honors and accolades to everything. And I'm just not seeing what the hype is about Miyazaki, at least based off this film. So listen, I respect this gangster. And maybe I should reserve this rating until I familiarize myself with more of his work. But in a vacuum, The Boy and the Heron, it narratively sucks. Pun fully intended. Yo, my pun game is high. Now listen, I can appreciate the dreamscape and the themes that like are kind of there, and when they're heavy-handed, they very much are, but fundamentally, the foundational elements of grounded plot, this film is a challenge to say the least. I think it's majestically scored and it is wonderfully animated to really evoke emotion that lends itself to being impactful, but not as engaging as I hoped. And I think that this dark, whimsy, fantasy adventure wasn't the greatest entry into the Hayao Miyazaki film world that I was hoping for. But let's see what happens when I get to some of his OG stuff. So, the Kobe Toby rating for The Boy and the Heron is a 5 out of 10. This is written and directed by Hayao Miyazaki. It is starring Christian Bale, Dave Bautista, Willem Dafoe, Karen Fukuhara, Mark Hamill, Robert Pattinson, and Florence Pugh. It is now playing in theaters everywhere. Well, that'll do it for this one. Can't wait to get you the next one. Until then, like, subscribe, comment, and share. I'm going back in time to take in possibly my favorite Godzilla movie ever with Godzilla Minus One. That's coming soon. Until then, thanks for rocking with me. And remember, when they ask you where you heard it from, tell them Kobe told me. Peace.